I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Chris Griffin joins me now. The comedian will be doing two shows Thursday, the 18th of October at the Biltmore Cabaret, a presentation of JFL Northwest. Both shows at 7:30 and 9:30 p.m. will be taped. Mr. Griffin lives here in Vancouver but was born in Calgary. Through his 20s, he had a comfortable life and career, but at 29, gave it up to fulfill a lifelong dream of doing stand-up comedy. In under a decade, he has established himself as a terrific storyteller, and he's won many competitions, including reaching the finals of the San Francisco International Comedy Competition. He's been featured at JFL Northwest for 3 years, even sharing the stage with comedians such as Norm Macdonald, Doug Stanhope, and Bert Kreischer. I've seen a couple of his bits online, and he's funny and a hilarious raconteur. I'll ask Mr. Griffin about his career thus far, his desire to do comedy, and this upcoming taping. Visit chrisgriffincomedian.com as well as jflnorthwest.com for tickets and information. The show is called Chris Griffin, I'm Not Your Family Guy. Please welcome to the Plante Online program, Chris Griffin. Mr. Griffin, good morning.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. When did it start for you that you were getting remarks or so on about the name and this character on the cartoon show?
About Family Guy?
Yeah,
I always say, thank God that show, I think it became popular right after I got out of high school.
So
probably saved me a lot of grief.
Mm.
But, I don't know. I think it did, I think it was probably 19 or 20. I remember the first time watching the show and kind of being like, oh, shit, I hope this isn't popular. And it was, but it's still on here. But, I don't know. People always get excited when they make the connection. So sometimes I pretend that I've never realized it. It's the first time.
And that's the name of the show, Chris Griffin, I'm Not Your Family Guy.
Yeah, that's based off because Jay-Z has a song lyric where he says, I'm not a businessman, I'm a business man, like comma man.
Right.
So I thought that would... As a throwback to that, to say I'm not your family guy, but then also to acknowledge it, because usually when I do a radio interview, that's the first question I'll get.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the show, but in all the things that I've read about you, they mention that, and so I'm wondering if it's something that I guess it does annoy you, doesn't it?
I'm fine with it. Like I think it's you get used to it. It'd be different, I think, if I was younger. Bullying me with it, but mostly people just get excited about it. And
it's better than say being your name being, I don't know, the same name as a serial killer or a president, say, right?
yeah, I know. I think I always think of who could be worse. Like, I guess you don't watch the show, but there's worse people even on that show I could be named after.
Why a special? You'll be doing the show twice at the Biltmore, and then both 7:30 and 7:30 and 9?
I believe it's 7 and 9:30.
7 and 9:30.
Time to turn it around in between. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have two shows that night, and both will be recorded. But most of your peers, I gather, make albums. Why something filmed?
I don't know. I just like to kind of go all in. There's times I remember, when I was coming up or before I even started comedy, I'd listen to a great comedy album, and then I would find out there was a DVD version of it, and then I feel the video just adds so much because I think there's a lot of physicalities to comedy, and I'm pretty high energy. So, I just want that option in there. I want to make it, as much of a production as I can. Because I think the best thing for a special is to kind of reflect as much as you can the live experience, which is never perfect, but you can get close. So I think the visual element adds a lot. Just unfortunately, it also adds a lot of cost. So that's the downside.
And then do you act is not the right word, but do you have certain considerations as to how you are on stage playing to a camera? But you're obviously playing to the audience that'll be there, but you also have the consideration of being in front of a camera. Those two shows, as opposed to say any other night that you'd work at a place like that, right?
Yeah, I think I'll just do my act. The guy producing it, Donovan Deschner, he's pretty familiar with my act, and we've been, you know, I've known him since I started comedy, so I feel comfortable that he's kind of taken the directing element of it, and we'll have enough cameras where there's coverage. So I think I kind of just do my thing, and then hopefully it's covered from all angles, and then we do have the chance of the second show. But if there's anything big time that's missed, you know, we can make adjustments. But yeah, it's I don't know. Two shots at it, so
yeah. Hope it goes well. And was that for you watching, say, a special on DVD or on television growing up? I guess that's really one of the first places that a comedian would learn how to do comedy, say, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that you're exactly right. And I think the very first comic, because I remember I had Steve Martin. My dad had the vinyl.
Yeah.
For Wild and Crazy Guy, I think, and then, but I would just listen to the audio of it, but then we were watching TV and I saw Sinbad, but it was video, and that was life-changing for me, just watching him do, I still remember his act out about those McDonald's milkshakes were too thick, and then the straws were too small, and he's like, you got a big vein popping out of your forehead, and I don't know, I just remember laughing really hard when I was very young, but yeah, I just loved that element to it, and there's some recordings that are albums only. Like, I think Patrice O'Neill's last album before he died, Mr. P, it's just audio, and I always just wish, you know, they just had that video part to it, too, so you can see him perform. But, yeah.
You mentioned that your dad had the Steve Martin album. Was he always interested, like, was he interested in comedians? And then, I guess, did you say... say learn that growing up in a household where comedy was sort of consumed?
Yeah, I think my whole family really appreciates comedy. I know my dad did. I think we're fairly conservative family, so I was, you know, I wasn't allowed to listen to things with swears and was kind of not exposed to that too early, but there was definitely always, I think that's why I was allowed to watch him back, because he's clean. But there was definitely an appreciation for comedy, and then when I got older, for sure, and we still talk about it, or, you know, even for Christmas, we get each other people's specials and watch it. So, yeah, it's my dad's a pretty funny guy, so definitely a big influence. That's one thing he did right. He gave us really good music and the comedy. Not that he did anything wrong.
Well, that's good, yeah. Yeah, it was good. That's the next question was, well, what did you do wrong? But, so you grew up in Calgary, I understand.
Yeah, I did.
And it's a very different city than say, Vancouver. We're about the same age, but I grew up in Vancouver, and I've seen some of your performances on YouTube, for example, and I've read interviews you've done, and it is a very different place, isn't it?
Yeah, they're quite different, just different mentalities and kind of different histories. I think, and both have their good and bad elements of it as it relates to comedy, at least. Whereas, you know, Vancouver is much, generally, you know, they're very PC, so they're known for that. So people will make fun of them, call them, you know, no fun Vancouver and all that stuff.
Sure.
But I think the audiences out here, just, they're not, you know, you don't get as easy a laugh. They're not, they won't laugh at, you know, basic jokes or dirty jokes, or you got to put a little more into it and make it a little more thoughtful. And then the downside of that is it's a lot more work. And whereas in, you know, Calgary, you can get an easy laugh out the gate. But I don't know. Yeah, sometimes they just want the stuff to be too simple. And then, you know, the challenge isn't there. When I was in Alberta, especially touring the road, I just felt that I was becoming more and more an Alberta comic, because there's just certain ways to get laughs, you know, a lot of crowd work or things like that. And then I thought the move to Vancouver would be really good, which it has. But ultimately, a funny joke should play in any town. And, I mean, there's good audiences and bad audiences. It's hard. You can't really generalize a whole city.
Sure.
But, yeah, there's the mentality is different in the thing. I think Alberta, they kind of want you to come at them. Sort of just, like, make me laugh. Let's do this. We're in.
Yeah.
Vancouver kind of wants you to bring them into your world. Or you kind of got to get them to understand what you're about, and then they're fully in.
You mentioned in one of the things I saw, one of the clips I saw, you played somewhere, and there was an older lady who paid the cover to get in, and then okay. she was just there to eat the meal or to order the food. And it was that in Vancouver?
Yeah, that was at 8 and a half restaurant.
You just automatically assume that that's, you know, here, right?
Yeah, it was definitely in Vancouver. Yeah, she was just not interested in the show, but it was hilarious because it was, it was one of the Monday shows. I think it runs every Monday at 8 and a half restaurant. So there's, you know, 8 comics on the show, and she just did not even care that the show was happening. Just faced backwards and ate her dinner, but it was very funny.
It just seems like a very Vancouver thing, and so I'm assuming when you play cities, I was going to say cities like Vancouver, but I mean, you know, all cities are unique, I suppose. Are those sorts of, I mean, those are sort of the challenges that you have to deal with show to show, right?
Yeah, I think so, and I think the problem sometimes with shows, weekly shows, I ran one in Kitsilano for a couple of years, is that sometimes people just show up and don't realize the show's happening, so it kind of just happens to them. But if you go to a comedy club in Vancouver, if you go to Yucks or the Mix on the weekend, it's jammed out. Everyone kind of understands what they're getting into, so then it's very fun. Some of my favorite places to play. I think Vancouver people can be very unimpressed if something happens to them that they're not expecting.
And then when you go to big cities, like, say, San Francisco or other cities in California, like Los Angeles, or even if one works on the East Coast in New York, it's a different game altogether, isn't it? It's a little more heightened, is it?
Yeah, it definitely is. I think they have such an appreciation for comedy down in the States because it's kind of one of their art forms they, you know, more or less invented. And then also just the star system is different down there. So people get, you know, you can actually make it. I mean, there's good and bad things to that too, but they really do appreciate comedy. So even if I go 2 hours, you know, over the border into Seattle, it's the first sentence I'll say on stage. I'm like, oh yeah, people are really into it here. Which I think it's like out in the East Coast of Canada too, where they really appreciate it. But yeah, and then even within the States, they all have different dynamics. Like I did a bunch of shows this summer, and you know, I was in Kentucky, they're yelling at me to talk slower. In Florida, I kind of had to adjust my material because it was an older audience. So everywhere you play, but then you just keep kind of working it in, and then, you know, like I said, a good joke should be able to play anywhere. So you make minor adjustments. Definitely take out all the Canadian references if you're in Florida, because they don't even know what snow is.
Have you got advice for us, Chris, on if we go to the Biltmore on the 18th of October, either 7 or 9:30, how we should comport ourselves as an audience, especially since it's being taped?
Yeah, I think I just want people to have fun. So we have enough, like I said, we have enough cover or cameras for coverage, so if people want to get up and get a drink, I'm going to get this other comic, very funny guy, Timmy's Naziopoulos, is going to open up, so he's going to do a whole deal about it. But just show up to have fun. As long as the energy's there, I hope we can jam it out. And I don't want any people to even think about the cameras. They'll be there, and we'll get them to film Asphyxius too, so people can kind of get used to it. But then eventually you just forget about them and just enjoy the performance. Hopefully don't heckle. That would be the only thing, maybe, because we just got to fix time.
Right. What I find fascinating about your life, Chris, in reading up about you and preparing for our chat today, is there's a lesson in your life story, because you grew up, and after school, you had sort of the job security. I mean, you had your own house at that point. And then, I guess, was it 29 when you just decided that you wanted to pursue comedy?
Yeah, it was.
And then you just did it, right?
Yeah, I think I just did it. I think it was, I grew up, you know, we weren't too well off or anything, so I started working very young and then paid for my university cash by working on night shift. And I bought a condo when I was 19 and then the house when I was around 24. And, you know, then the oil boom thing kind of happened in Calgary, so I had some equity in that too. But then I was just kind of out in suburbia and I started my own business. In a publishing related field, the legal side of things, and that was you know, starting to go pretty well. University of Toronto Press was like my main client. So, but it was just, I think I was 26, and I was kind of like, this is it. So, like, what do I do now? You know, because I felt I wasn't really interested in kids. Yeah, I just felt like I hadn't really lived life because I worked so much, and I just felt the reward was kind of, you know, the stability was boring more, and then so I kind of started. It was around 26 when I really just started, and thank God the internet existed, and I started looking around and finding other things, and realized, you know, there is a side to life where it involves the risk, but you can kind of chase your dreams and really do that. So, yeah, I did a bunch of things related to that, you know, traveled, went to Africa and Germany, and went down to L.A. and met some cool people there, and then it was, I was doing kind of a movie-related thing down in the States, and met a comedian there, Bill Dawes, in L.A., and he was, I just thought he was the funniest person, even offstage, I'd ever met, and yeah, I talked to him a little bit about comedy, and then just decided to give it a shot, and then the second I did my first show, I was like, oh, this is it for sure, and yeah, just loved it, still do, you know, eight years later, but it involves a lot of sacrifice, because when you start comedy, you're not very good, and you don't make any money, and then you actually lose money sometimes, you're going to go on the road, and get your chops.
Yeah, I guess for a lot of people in who have, I guess, aspirations for show business, I mean, they just see the sort of stars, and they think it's pretty easy. But I mean, it is a lot of hard work, isn't it? And so when people ask you for advice, I'm sure a lot of the young people do. What do you tell them?
Yeah, you're right. It is an insane amount of work. I think the one, because even before I started writing. Probably when I was around 25, 26, and I really enjoyed that creative process. One of my degrees was in English, so and that's partly why I took that degree, because I always enjoyed that side of things. And I did it for about 4 years, right before up to I did comedy, and I was starting to get decent at it. But I just asked myself, I'm like, can I do this for 10 years plus, you know, whatever it takes to get great? And if it was the only option, I think I could have, but it was just very lonely. It just felt like it was missing a part to it. And then stand-up, when I did that, even now, I'm 8 years in, and they say it kind of takes 10 years to get good and then 15 to get great, and I have no question that I'll be able to put that time in, and I won't lose my love for it. So that's only my advice would be to younger people, is that just make sure you really, really love it, because there's a lot of work and sacrifice, and you have to give up, you know, things that normal people won't have to give up in life, but the payoffs are big, I find, and very rewarding. And, you know, if you love the thing you're doing, you're going to be immersed in a community or in a community with people doing that same thing, so you'll find a lot of peers. And yeah, I think if it's not work for you, then I would say just do it, go all in.
Yeah, I guess a lot of young people are convinced that making it in show business is something that happens overnight. I guess we've been sold that by films and you know, other myths, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure. And even in my head, you know, when I started comedy, I was like, oh, I remember I would record all my shows when I first started. Everyone had a spreadsheet of where it was, what jokes I did, and et cetera. And then I had a calendar of all my shows. And then 2 years into the calendar, I put a note, like, should be famous by now. And then I got there 2 years, and that date popped up. And I remember just laughing so hard, because after 2 years, I'd realize that's not going to be the case at all. But we are fed that myth that it will just happen overnight, and it's okay to believe that. And then when you do get the, I think the key is just to put the work in, so when you do get the break, you're ready for it. Because there are certain things, you know, something goes viral or somebody just sees you that likes you, and you do have those opportunities and those moments. So just making sure you're in a position to make the best of it when it does happen. But yeah, it's not going to happen overnight. I think Eddie Murphy is the only guy ever in the history of the world that was just funny almost overnight.
Yeah.
I mean, even Chappelle started when he was 14, so he had about 10 years in when he popped, but yeah.
You mentioned the English degree, and the one thing when I'm watching you and marveling at your abilities is the what a lot of people have already said about you is that you're such a gifted storyteller. And I guess that comes from writing, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure that helped. And I think when I started comedy, I wasn't necessarily... Actually, I think my bits were always kind of story-related. And when I was having some success in writing, it was always kind of humorous articles. And then I kind of laid off the storytelling in comedy for a few years out the gates just to get different skills. Because I realized, I always thought that, even when I very first started, some headliners, I asked if I'd write for them. And they said, you know, you can't really, you're not a good performer. But if you write for me, I'm a good performer, and you know, together we could be successful. But I didn't want that. I wanted to learn how to perform. So I think, I had a lot of years writing that I definitely brought in to comedy. And then when I was in Vancouver, and I was, you know, 5 years in, I just made the switch where I'm like, okay, I'm going to go into storytelling, which is a difficult switch initially, because then instead of just trying a new bit, you're trying a whole new story, and they're usually not as funny out the gates. You gotta learn your rhythms and put some jokes in, so you kind of just go to these open mics and bomb and first tell the story, and then it just gets better and better, and yeah, you kind of find the beat. But I really enjoy it, and it feels so personal up there, and that, you know, I can be in the moment because it's something that happened to me that I can kind of relive.
And so if you're good on stage, what are you like, say, with other people in smaller situations, say? I mean, are you the guy in your friend group who's the raconteur, say?
Yeah, I think I'm in my friend group, I'm one of the funnier guys. I was known as that growing up, and but all my friends are pretty funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they would say that. But then what's strange is I'm like not funny at all. Or the funniest thing is at work, when I'm just in a business setting,
yeah,
I'm the least funny guy in the world, because I'm just, I don't know, doing work and not, like, thinking of anything funny. But, yeah, I don't know. On stage is kind of a person. I get to be the fullest version of the person that I want to be and express myself. And that's what's kind of the beauty of comedy, is it gives you, you know, kind of a vehicle to express those thoughts, where everything is okay, almost everything. And the purpose is to laugh, whereas in a lot of day-to-day situations, there's not much humor in them. People don't.
So you said that when you're on stage, you're the fullest person you are. Is that on stage where you're the happiest?
Yeah, I think on stage I'm very happy, but the moments in life as well is just kind of sitting there before, especially when it's kind of a packed room and you're about to go on stage, or after, and you know, you're buzzing from the show and people are coming up and talking to you. I very often kind of have, you know, kind of out-of-body experiences, or just take a moment and really appreciate what it is. Yeah, I like that. I think I just feel so comfortable there, and I feel I'm doing the thing I'm meant to do in life, or, you know, yeah, actively kind of pursuing that thing, where I'm not compromising when I'm on.
Well, that's marvelous, because not only are you fulfilling yourself, but you're entertaining a lot of people, and you're pretty good at it. This has been such a pleasure to talk to you, Chris. I guess I wish you well by saying break a leg in show business. Is that right?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that thing just came from when people would bow at the end of a play. They would put a break in their leg. It just means you have a good enough performance. You could bow at the end instead of snapping your leg off.
There you go. Yeah. Well, a lot of people looking forward to the 18th. All the best. Thanks for this.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. It was great to talk to you.
Visit jflnorthwest.com for tickets and information. And, of course, Chris's website is at chrisgriffincomedian.com. Chris Griffin, I'm Not Your Family Guy, is Thursday, the 18th of October, at 7 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. at the Biltmore Cabaret. Chris Griffin, join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.